Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Dacia Eaton, South Central reporter for KSKA Radio, and Mike Bradner of Alaska Legislative Digest. Dacia, the EPA held another round of hearings here in Anchorage on the proposed Pebble Mine. The hearings went on for several days. What was the purpose and what was accomplished?
Well, there were meetings, and there were 3 days of them, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The purpose was to introduce the 12 scientists nominated to the panel. It's a scientific panel that will give feedback to the EPA on their draft Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment so far. And they're from a wide range of places, universities, consultants, working in different industries. And the first day, Tuesday, people, you know, the public was able to come stand before them and tell them what they thought for a couple minutes each. And it was pretty industry heavy when I was there in the morning on Tuesday, and I heard everybody from native people living in villages near the mine to people working in the mining industry and environmentalists of all colors. And so that was what was going on, but you were asking me what was the purpose?
Yes.
Well, sometimes that gets lost. The deal is the 12-person panel is going to file a report basically back to the EPA saying, here's what we think of your assessment so far, and here are the changes we think you should make. They'll consider that. It's a way for the EPA to get feedback of people outside of their offices about what they're doing. And then that will be incorporated into the draft Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, which is due out sometime around the new year.
Now, were there representatives or scientists, not sure how to describe them, people who were there detailed there representing the state of Alaska?
I did not hear anyone from the state of Alaska present. That may have happened. I was only there on Tuesday morning and checking in with different folks throughout.
But you were able to get some essential understanding of the Native perspective, right? What did you learn?
Yes, I did file a story for National Native News on this as well. And some of the Native people who were there, one woman I remember in particular, said that she was very confused by all the people coming to her village from mining companies and from the EPA and different activist groups. And she was asking the EPA for more time to try to understand the watershed assessment, and she felt like they were rushing. And interestingly, the people representing Pebble Mine and the different mining companies invested there also wanted the EPA to slow down. And they say they want them to slow down because they want more time to develop their mine plan. And it's kind of been a race, if you will, between the EPA trying to get the watershed assessment out and the mining companies saying, we're trying to get our mine plan out. And, you know, I don't know if they are racing or trying to be slower.
Is this a usual process or an extraordinary one? I mean, it's a feature of EPA policy.
I think it's a pretty typical process. The EPA, for these meetings, hired an outside contractor to conduct the meetings. And it's a way for the EPA to step back and say, listen, it's not just us. We're getting all these scientists. They're going to look at it separately. We hired a contractor to set the meeting up. We have nothing to do with it, and we're going to take all their criticisms. And there were a lot of criticisms from people with the mining companies
in particular.
So it works
as a sort of an advisory panel, frames questions that then should be, again, answered by the developers and by EPA. But they're not going to issue a report, are they, of yay or nay on?
It won't be a yay or nay report, but they'll make suggestions about how to basically edit this big document that will be out in the new year.
And there was some discussion of, or you were able to get some insight into the mine scenarios of, for example, how big the mines might be, or I don't think you'd say how small, but the size, relatively.
Well, one of the attorneys for the Pebble Partnership was pretty upset about the hypothetical mine scenarios that were presented in the draft Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment. He said that, and I think Shively called them.
John Shively. Represents the project.
The Pebble Partnership. He's called those scenarios fantasy mines, and everybody quoted him on that. But I went and talked with people from the EPA and said, what are those scenarios? And they said one was a 1,300-acre mine, and the other one was a 9,400-acre mine. And they said they got those numbers from Northern Dynasty Minerals public records. So they're going with what they have because there is no mine plan yet.
Yeah, and the other thing is, as we've seen with major mines all over Alaska, some measure depends on what they find in nearby adjacent areas and how successful they are and what's the price of the minerals they're taking, all of that.
And we know that there are many claims surrounding the Pebble claim. So,
Mike,
it's an area of active exploration by other people. In fact, fairly recently, and it's all the same formation stretching north. Now, maybe they get out of the environmental sensitive zone, I'm not sure. But this is a highly emotional situation in the bay, especially for those who are fishers. And I mean, this has sort of come to the point where if you're in the fisher communities, you could only be against it. There isn't an option for you.
Having reported from Dillingham for a year before this, I can tell you that the majority of the people who live down there near the bay, they're, you know, pretty much against this. But you go up north, up near Lake Iliamna, near the mine site, and you find people in, communities which are more economically deprived, and many of them sold their fishing permits years ago and aren't connected to that fishing industry and aren't making money from it. So Pebble seems like a viable project to them.
Mike, one of the things that anybody who's watched the Olympics has to have noticed is the anti-Pebble advertising, which features a gymnast falling off a pommel horse and a gigantic bike wreck. Why is this in the middle of the Olympics, and what's
well,
it accomplishing?
Well, it's pretty obvious. It's super prime time, and everybody's watching, and it has this great relationship, and you notice that. I mean, it's
probably going to be the most memorable advertisement of the campaign.
And somebody who must have had a field day, who were the creators of that ad. I mean, just sort of, boy, we got it, you know, and this. Because it is a wonderful ad. I don't know who their production people are, but that must be an asset.
Well,
then,
presumably this is trying to set something of public opinion, rather. I mean, there's initiative on the ballot.
That's
there's
right.
No vote on the Pebble Mine in the near future. The process Dacia has discussed is going to take quite a bit of time. This is
purely trying to shape opinion.
I have to look that up on YouTube. I don't have a TV and I haven't seen it yet, but
you
guys make me want to look it up.
You won't be able to. The man falling off the pommel horse is definitely memorable.
And very singular. I mean, you can't miss it. I mean, it's just.
Mike Bredner, let's go back to you. Governor Sean Parnell is determined to get a Republican state Senate majority. The primary election should tell us to some degree how successful he might be or what his opportunities are. Not only are you a veteran Alaska journalist, but you are a former Speaker of the House of Representatives. You're familiar with both the House and the Senate and how they organize. I've been through that many times. What does the voice of history here make of all this?
Well, first, this is that unusual year that we have when there's no major statewide candidates on the ballot except the congressman. And even in past
Don Young.
Years, it's not been unusual that he didn't have serious opposition. And so it's like the primary, who comes out to vote? It's the super voters. And so you'll have an edge there for Republicans. I mean, they have several edges. We've redistricted and we've shaped the districts to that side of the ledger. Nobody makes any bones about that. They generally have straight ticket voters. They, have, more money and more access to money. So it's hard to take a read on the primary and see what happens. The Menard race and Dunleavy up in the valley is of interest.
Incumbent leader Linda Menard.
Yes, senator. But basically up there, there's a lot of the Tea Party people who are unhappy with her. Given Dunleavy's background, I'm not sure that he is much different. He's an educator, and he's going to come in with probably very moderate views. The outcome of the Fairbanks race between former Senator Seekins and Click Bishop, our most
former
recent
Commissioner of Labor.
Labor, yeah. I mean, that's a real interest, and both of them appear to be really going at it. I mean, Seekins may have the advantage just because of old traditional, Republican associations, Well, in fact, he probably does, but Bishop is making a real run at it. So, and those two seats would be critical as well. Of course, another critical seat deferred to the general is the Thomas race, Senator Thomas and Senator Coghill.
Did it surprise you in looking at the APOC reports that Thomas has raised more money than Coghill up till now?
Well, no, because John Coghill, I mean, he's an old timer in the system, but he's always come from an area where you had pretty clear running. And he really hasn't had to go through a highly competitive election where you have to get out there and raise money. It's just not his forte, who he is. And I think
asking people for money is a learned skill.
That's right. It's tough, you know. And but it does show that the labor interests are very serious about this election.
Thomas coming from a labor
background.
That's
right. He comes from a labor background. They're both old-time Fairbanks identified people. In some ways, they're a lot like each other in the sense they're real gentlemen and people the public likes. And
one thing I have struggled to understand here is Gary Stevens, the current Senate president, is a Republican. He's an incumbent. He's running. He's running against a Democrat. He was the architect of the oil tax legislation, which Governor Parnell abhors. If they are able to get a organization, what do you do with somebody like him or Bert Stedman, who were essentially, they're Republicans, but they were leading the opposition?
Well, that's going to be an interesting situation come November, because if there's a lot of chips on people's shoulder, I mean, people going in and they want to punish and do this type of thing, then I would think it leans towards reestablishment of the coalition. You know, and if you attack people very personally, they're going to dig their heels in. And, you know, you're not going to be willing to let bygones be bygones and come up with a new arrangement. So, you know, there's a question of whether the coalition succeeds itself, whether a coalition succeeds itself, but which isn't quite the same, and maybe lets a tax bill go to the floor. Doesn't mean that it's in cement.
Right.
And then, you know, whether you can put together an all-Republican organization, and sort of at what price. And so you have the Tea Party people who, you know, want no deviation, you know, no matter what. And it's sort of an unnatural thing, because in a 10-10 split, or in a 20-member Senate or a 40-member House, very small, people have to take care of what first?
You know, home.
That's right. What's their constitutional responsibility? They swear an oath to the U.S. Constitution, the state constitution, their home districts, broad statewide interests. Somewhere there comes party, and you understand parties wanting a certain amount of party loyalty, but I've never seen their mention in the U.S. Constitution or, you know, in state constitutions. They're a private organization, and so in Alaska we've had many, many coalitions.
And of course, the organization of the legislature is one of the activities that's not subject to the open meetings law. It's very rarely reported on very well, and which mostly reflects the difficulty that the journalists, including myself, face. People come out of a room and tell you something that may or may not be true about what transpired during the meetings.
Well, it's a mixture of, if you say, well, this, you know, party caucuses, I mean, parties are private associations.
Right.
As we found out in the courts with the open primary. I suppose the caucuses in Juneau that they have as partisan caucuses are private organizations. And you don't know quite what goes on inside those caucuses.
Well, and those organizational caucuses, they frequently take place in the hotels in Anchorage. They don't
take
place in the Capitol. It's
a running game.
Yeah, that's
people
exactly
traveling,
right.
You know, everywhere, talking to people, others trying to sniff out, well, you know, is this really what's going on and where should I be in relation to it? Because that's the single most important act they'll make in any legislature.
Because it determines your standing for the next couple
right.
of years.
And if you don't come from an urban area, it's critical to your district. I mean, in an urban area, you have all kind of associates who are nearby to represent the town as a whole. And if you come from someplace else, like Wrangell, place in Southeast or somewhere, you're hanging out there. I mean, you don't have all these. I mean, put this way, you can do what you want in Anchorage, and they can't really punish you.
Right. They can keep you. Because they're punishing Anchorage.
They can keep you from having your name on a piece of legislation and passing it. But, you know, they can't punish you without punishing all the other legislators.
Right. Let's go back to Daisha. Daisha, the Alaska Renewable Energy Fair starts August 11th. This is an annual event. What are we expecting this year in downtown Anchorage?
Well, it's going to be on the Park Strip, and it is, I think, 11 to 9 Saturday on the Park Strip, and it's between G and I Streets. It's a new location. There'll be 19 presenters with workshops about 45 minutes each and 40 vendors. It sounds like also good music provided by local Alaska musicians. It's sort of this fun fair thing, but also educational. And aside, it's across the street from the governor's picnic.
So you can go over there and get a hot dog and then figure out how to renew your energy?
I guess so, yeah. And they're going to have some great presenters. It sounds like they're going to have this guy, Thorsten Schloop. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. But he's doing a workshop called Living with the Arctic Sun. And he is building zero net energy homes that produce as much energy as they use. How he is doing this, we would all like to know. It sounds like a great idea for Alaska.
I guess the other question there is, what's the size of the home? Right?
Yes, the size and the cost would be interesting. So, that's happening this weekend. And I guess the eighth one sounds interesting. It's put on by REAP, let's see if I can get it right, Renewable Energy Alaska Project.
Okay. All right, let's see what happens this weekend with them. Mike, the oil companies are looking at Point Thompson, and Brother Tim in the Alaska Journal of Commerce reports there might be as many as 1,000 new jobs this winter up there. What can you tell us based on your reporting at Tim's?
Well, what I'm gathering from the Point Thompson situation is that there's sort of been a decision that they need Point Thompson gas to drive, oil at Prudhoe Bay. And you looked at the earlier so-called settlement, between...
And remind us, where is Point Thompson in
relation to... Point Thompson is eastward from Prudhoe Bay, right on the edge of Anwar. And in previous, there was no way to get gas if you wanted to from Prudhoe or between the two. And it's a tremendously high pressure field. So Governor Parnell, you'll remember in October, talked about bringing all the industry together at Point Thompson settlement, and we're going to have the great alignment. And that speaks to, suggest a gas pipeline, to some sort of an Asian market. But you read the scope of that settlement and you really feel like, this gas is going to Prudhoe Bay to drive the field, and it does then speak to development of the field. It's a reason to develop it, and everybody getting on
the
same
team. If 1,000 people went to work there this winter, what would they be doing?
Well, I don't know whether you can get 1,000 people in there, this quickly, but it really has to do with marshalling rigs and getting them in there, getting them on site, preparing for drilling out the field. So number one, you find out more what you have, delineate the field, and the state wants to know that too. And there, in some of the past arrangements between the state and the industry, they actually traded parts of the field, part that would be more productive and the state also wanted to know more about. But I think it's going to get confusing come end of September when Governor Parnell has said he's going to surface the results of the great alignment, with the industry, and to whether that's just sort of political puff that's oriented with the gasoline, with the oil tax and all these things, or whether, it's something else. And I think you sense there's sort of a political goal.
Well, and also that whether you're a Democrat or Republican or whatever side you're on here, there are people who are going to use Point Thompson and, to say, well, either the system is working or it's broken, or you pick.
Well, I think where we are right now, it said we will have production from Point Thompson, and we will have it at least coming to Prudhoe Bay, and we will have a lot of employment. And that's good news for the private side of our economy.
Okay. Mike, Congressman Don Young, our congressman, Congressman for All Alaska, appears before a Chamber of Commerce audience in Fairbanks, and kicks off his campaign by saying, EPA, other government agencies, we're tired of all this government regulation. If you got a dam to build, a mine to dig, some other project that really is going to benefit Alaska, just go do it. But you've known Don 50 years now, I think, or close to it. You reported on him. You were in the legislature with him. What's he up to this time?
Well, I think he's just being Don Young. And he's, of course, not going to object to the federal government being at Eielson. And it'll be another tune, as Eielson, of course, is possibly being a base subject to closure. But Don is it's sort of interesting because 50 years ago, when I first knew Don, he was the champion of opposing Rampart Dam on the Yukon. I mean, he was the environmentalist, fair-haired boy, the young mayor of Fort Yukon who was defying the giants. And
Included our U.S. senators, our congressmen.
That's right, everybody in Alaska. And he and Jay Hammond were sort of lone wolves who were questioning Rampart. And of course, it was a project that was never to be. It violated every, bird treaty that was out there. And
they couldn't make it make sense economically.
That's right. You didn't have the technology at that time even to transport the energy to lower 48 markets. Don's made a transition of convenience with his party over the years.
I think I represent my constituents. And on the other hand, Don Young being Don Young, it's not like the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce is going to interpret this as a green light to defy government. That's not the way they operate.
For the people who actually work with it and have to do it, EPA is a fact of life. And they're going to, work productively with that organization, not, defy it. And in the early days of NEPA, I remember there was a difference if you talked to somebody on the street, sort of,
National Environmental Protection Act.
Which was simultaneous with, the pipeline coming. And they would rage and this and that against it. But in terms of their own private meetings of industry, it was very much, how do you work with this new beast? What do we have to do? We have to get the job done. And I think that's it with all these federalized projects. I mean, you have to figure out what you need to do. How do you get the job done?
And that is the essence of the approach ultimately.
Desha,
we have a report on a recent police shooting here in Anchorage by those who are charged with investigating police shootings. What can you tell us?
The state law department office of special prosecutions and appeals says that the two officers who shot a gentleman in South Anchorage, I believe it was July 1st, the man was holding a BB gun that looked like a real Smith & Wesson gun, and they're saying that that the police officers were justified in shooting him because the gun looked real. And those officers are legally justified in doing that. But there have been a few shootings, and this is one of the higher profile ones.
And the family, or the man's son, was it, is highly distressed?
Yes, because he didn't want, obviously he didn't want the police to shoot his father. He called the police for help to get his father calmed down, and you can read the whole article in the Anchorage Daily News. I guess the big question is, and a lot of people are asking, what can the police do differently? And the police now have set up some community meetings. They had a few of them. They've sort of died down. We're not hearing much more about them. I think people are wanting to know, what is the police going to do to work with these communities? What are the communities going to do to reach out to the police? How can they work together? These are, both of these shootings were of, people in, one was in Mountain View, one was in South Anchorage, people who maybe were
marginalized in some way.
So
economically, socially, whatever.
Yes, thank you. And so people are asking, what can we do differently? And I hope that the police force and those communities are asking that too, and I'm sure they are.
Thank you. Finally, Mike, Governor Parnell says no to insurance exchanges, which are part of the Obama administration health care reforms. Why is he saying no, and what are the implications?
Well, I think he's saying no because he's courting the extreme Republican fringe of the Tea Party. And he's sort of building his credentials with them, which tells me I think he's running for the U.S. Senate. I think that's why he's doing it. Because we go back to his old veto of Senate Bill 16 that would have expanded Denali Kid Care to more children. And we're the only state now that's not making progress on the exchange. They have not elected to enter this process. And this is just
wouldn't the governor, if he was here, say, I'm doing this on the merits. I'm really concerned about cost, expensive, invasive Washington policy, et cetera, some version of that?
Well, you go through the planning phases. There's been large amounts of money that have been awarded to different states and several levels of planning, and even consortiums where they're working with universities to develop more sophisticated models and develop the IT stuff, the technical stuff that has to go with these. So, I mean, it's just a shopping center for small business and individuals, and the stress on small business who can seek consortiums with others that they couldn't normally do. So
we have to seek getting out of here because we're out of time. Thank you for joining us on Alaska Edition. See you next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.